gold.com.
Good morning, Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 11:30. Welcome to The Dirt Bag, a program dedicated to growing food. Today, though, we will be talking about the basis of kind of any gardening, and that has to do with fertile soil and answering, hopefully, the question, can you get fertile soil by fertilizing? It's a big topic, and hopefully we won't have to use the whole half hour to talk about that, because I would like to answer your questions today, too. Your gardening questions. If you have some, 503-231-8187. You can talk to the dirt bag. How about that? Well, what is fertile soil? What is fertilizer? And how do they differ, and can you get one by just using the other? To answer the first question, the last question first, can you get fertile soil by adding fertilizer? The answer is not usually. How I would define fertile soil is that intersection of various components. And to make this easy, I've just grouped them into four circles. And where all the circles interlap in the middle, it is what would be called fertile soil there. The first kind of circle we'll talk about here has to do with the nutrients that are in your soil and the ones that your plants will need. Now, typically, when we add fertilizer, this is what the deficiency, you might say, that we are trying to rectify. So your soil will have all the complement of nutrients that it needs, and hence then your plants will be able to use those nutrients from the soil. There's that old adage about feed the soil and the soil will feed the plants. And that's what we're aiming for as far as the nutrient circle goes. The second circle are the microorganisms that are found in soil. These are bacteria and fungus at the very lowest levels, but then there are others. The protozoa, the nematodes, those organisms that eat the bacteria and fungus, which in turn then release nutrients that are in forms that plants can use. The nematodes and the other little bit larger microorganisms than the bacteria and the fungus, those simple one-celled creatures, something will eat those too, until you finally get up to the millipedes and whatnot that are eating those organisms. So this is the soil food web that's going on underground, and it's all important. And we need to take care of these underground microorganisms, mostly the bacteria and the fungus is what we're mainly concerned about. And we need to offer food to them, too. We need to feed the microorganism, these very small mini beasts in the soil that feed on organic matter. That's one reason why we add, or it's a good idea to add, compost to your soil, because that's what feeds these microorganisms. Now, when you're adding compost, you will also be adding nutrients, which goes back to that first circle. But the main benefit, the main benefit are the microorganisms that are being added to your soil, too. Of course, moving on to the third circle, the kind of the building block of soil is dirt, if you will. And so the third soil, the third circle then has to do with, well, what is your dirt made of? Here in the Portland metro area, and really all of Western Oregon, and any place along the, well, most places along the Missoula flood lands, we've got a mixture of river rock, clay, and even some sand. So put that all together, and you can have some pretty good soil if you have the right proportion there. Most gardeners will complain about having too much clay in their soil, and of course that is a major problem. But there are ways to overcome that, and once again, the main way to overcome that is to add compost. Boy, well, we're seeing here how important compost is to soil fertility. And the fourth circle is a component of good, healthy, fertile soil has to do with certain things that we have no control over. For example, the air, well, the temperature of the air, the temperature of the soil, and also the amount of water that's in the soil. During the summer, we can add, in fact, need to add supplemental water to our gardens. I've never, in 30 years of gardening, have never not had to add water to my vegetable garden, at least to have good fertile soil and to enhance good production. So when we put all of those together, overlap them, what's in the middle there is fertile soil. You can get by with not optimum amounts of any of those four. However, your plants cannot thrive unless all of those are in, all of those components happen in the right amount. You know, well, what is the right amount? Well, for example, for our soil, we can do things to keep the organic matter level up in it. In ideal soil, we would want about, really typically about 5% of the soil should be in the made up of organic matter. And this is compost or manure or other living or what was once living matter that's now in the soil, just debris that's in the soil, if you will. Another thing that we can do to make sure that we have good tilth in our soil, that is the actual physical condition of the soil, and you've longtime listeners have heard me say this countless times, that we can protect that by not disturbing the soil structure. Rototilling is one of the worst things you can do for your soil if you don't need to incorporate organic matter into the soil. Now, if you're starting out, you very well may need to do that. But in the long run, you shouldn't need to rototill or even turn your soil and keep it to a minimum when you do. Some of my beds, my vegetable beds, my raised vegetable beds, have not been rototilled or hand-turned in even, I'm not sure, 15 years. And I'll cut off the spent plants, whether that's tomatoes or corn or broccoli. I just cut the plant off right at the soil level and don't pull up the roots. I just let those roots rot right in the ground there. That's organic matter right in the soil. That's where we want it. And the next year, if the stalk still remains, I'll just plant right next to it or between the two, start a new row, if you will. So that's one way to make sure that our soil keeps that organic matter up, because by rototilling it and whatnot, you can destroy the organic matter that's there. So adding compost is the best way to keep the organic matter in your soil up to around 5%. Typically, it's around less than 1%. And so you can imagine how much more organic matter that you can add. I would recommend my rule of thumb is to add compost every time that I plant in my beds, and that could be two or three times a year. But at the minimum, I add it once, either in the fall when I'm planting a cover crop or in the spring before I plant my veggies, whatever they may be. But I also like to top dress my veggies and whatnot with compost after I've put them in the ground. and the soil organisms, the worms and whatnot, beetles, other shredders, we might say, can incorporate the organic matter right into the soil, doing the work for you. The nutrients, now getting back to the first circle here, we know that plants need at least 18 different nutrients. And can you buy all these 18 nutrients and add them to the soil? I'm not sure that you can. And I'm certainly sure that you can't buy one organic source of these where everything is added in the right proportion that won't be washed out of the soil. And the key word here is organic. A lot of times you can buy little bottles that have, you know, vitamins and pills or nutrients and whatnot. And those nutrients may be there, but they're not organic, and they certainly won't be sequestered in the soil. What do I mean by that? In the long run, our best bet is to sequester the nutrients in the soil and in the organisms themselves. The organisms that live in the soil, once again, the bacteria, the fungus, the protozoa, the nematodes, they all eat organic matter. They digest this material and they put the nutrients into their bodies, if you will, just like we do. You know, we've got lots of nitrogen in us in the form of protein. And when these organisms die, then they release these nutrients back to the soil or the plants, and the plants can use them. The problem, or one of the problems with using inorganic fertilizers or fertilizers that are made from petroleum or natural gas, synthesized fertilizers, the nutrients, which are mostly nitrogen, are in a form that the plant can already use them in. It doesn't have to go through any type of transformation by the organisms, the bacteria, the fungus. And that's another function of these microorganisms. They transform the nutrients into a form that the plants can use them. But when you add an inorganic fertilizer, a synthesized fertilizer, the plants will be able to uptake as much as they can of that nutrient before it gets washed out of the soil, out of its root zone, into our groundwater and oftentimes into our waterways. So the nutrients then are not sequestered in the bodies of these organisms. And the organisms don't wash out. They're able to cling on to the soil particles that are in your soil, essentially, and are available then as long as they can continue to eat and live and die and, well, poop and die. As long as they can continue to do that, the nutrients then become available on an ongoing basis, and your plants can dip into this whenever they need it, not when you decide they need it. I mean, the plants are a better judge of what they need. So what we want here is a sustainable nutrient supply for them. And by having all of these components, these circles here, at the optimum levels, you will have an ongoing nutrient supply. You'll have ongoing microorganisms living and dying and thriving there. Your soil structure remains good, because good soil structure is caused by or created by the microorganisms and some macroorganisms that are in the soil. And then all the thing you have to worry about is, well, what about the temperature, the air temperature? You can't do anything about that. But you can we try to use floating row covers and things like that. But you can also just wait until the soil temperature and whatnot has stabilized. And then you can make sure you have the right amount of water. Not saturated soils, but generally moist. And with vegetables, you don't want the soil temperature, the moisture level to completely dry out. That's can lead to major problems, and will not have you can't have healthy, thriving plants at that point. So the question now is, do we have a, or can we, or I'll just repeat the question again, can you get fertile soil through fertilizing? Can you fertilize your way to soil fertility? So the answer has to be, well, no. If you are just missing those big three nutrients that come in fertilizer, the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, the NPK, then perhaps you can. But generally, your garden will be missing a lot more of those nutrients. Or, excuse me, if you only need those three nutrients, or let me start again still. It's hard to imagine a scenario when your garden only needs those three nutrients. And fertilizer is kind of a legal technical term, which means that the manufacturers of fertilizer have to tell you what the NPK content is. That's it. And sometimes they'll add calcium or sulfur or something like that and give a percentage for that too. But generally, it's just those big three. So I guess my short answer is, can you fertilize your way to soil fertility? No, not gonna do it. All right. We have a call. Good morning, Rob. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yes. You said that it's best not to either rototill or hand-turn the soil,
yeah,
which destroys the soil somehow.
Well, it destroys the structure of it, and it can speed up the depletion of organic matter because the microorganisms eat it more.
So if I go out to plant in the spring and my vegetable beds are all filled up with weeds and grass,
uh-huh,
that's the problem I have.
Yeah, well, and that's another scenario where you may be tempted to rototill, and you may have to, but if I can just finish my,
sure,
what I was going to say is that the best way to deal with that is to not let the weeds grow or to prevent the weeds from growing in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And that means in the fall to cover your bed with leaves or to plant a cover crop or,
yeah,
something like that. But, you know, you didn't necessarily do that, so
right,
where are,
right,
we at now?
Well, if I, what I do basically, I mean, I've been hearing more and more about not digging it up, turning it over and everything. I don't use a rototiller, by the way.
Yeah, okay. And that's good because hand tilling or spading is a lot less destructive.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, all I try to do is I leave the grass and everything in. I just turn it over and chop it up a little bit, and I try to get rid of some of the more invasive weeds first by pulling them up.
Yeah, that's good.
So,
I can just tell you another tactic that can be used, and that's to, if you have a weed whacker, or you can do it by hand, but weed whack the weeds down just to soil level, just as short as you can, and then cover it with cardboard or many sheets of newspaper, uh-huh, and put a organic mulch on top, whether manure or compost would be the best,
uh-huh,
and then cut holes in the cardboard
yeah,
where you're going to plant,
uh-huh,
and so you don't need to, and that, of course, you would have to dig the hole so you could plant your plant.
Yeah.
But that's an easy way to deal with the weeds.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds good.
Well, not only does it sound good, it's easier. You know?
So I could do that in the spring?
You could do that now.
Or, yeah, right. I mean, yeah, okay.
Yeah, anytime. But the best thing, once again, is to plant a cover crop or to mulch with leaves.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's surprising how much the leaves in the fall work, because the weed seeds just don't have a chance to germinate,
yeah,
as long as they're covered.
Yeah.
One of the further problems by rototilling or even hand spading is that every time you do that, you bring more weed seeds to the surface,
yeah,
so they can germinate. And many seeds just need the light, just a split second of light,
yeah,
before they germinate. So,
okay,
it's just, you know, it just reminds me of the saying about, you know, the best time to plant a fruit tree is 20 years ago,
right?
But the second best time is today.
Yeah.
So, you know, the time to prevent weeds is last fall.
Right.
But
all I can do is go forward.
That's right. And then learn from it. So your next fall,
okay,
you cover them up or plant a cover crop.
Yeah, that's what I'll try and do from now on.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. If you have another more questions, 503-231-8187. That reminds me of something now that I have forgotten that I was going to say. No. Hard pan is a question about, maybe plow pan is something, plow pan is a term that is used to describe the physical result of countless rototillings, or plowing for that matter, in that your plow or your rototill only gets down so far, and that might be 8 inches for a good rototiller. And so the soil below that 8 inches gets compacted repeatedly by these tines that can't go any further deeply into the soil. And so it tends to pack down that the soil below that. And it makes it hard for roots to penetrate that. It's hard for water to penetrate that. That's one of the kind of the ideas of double digging, is that you can break up this plow pan, if you will, or hard area down below. But for my money, it's just a lot easier to let the plants do that and the microorganisms. And for example, planting clovers in the fall, crimson clover, they have pretty deep roots, and they'll go down feet, 3 to 5 feet. And they can penetrate that, and just let do that every year, and pretty soon your plow pan disappears, and you're good to go. Just Jim's on the line with the dirt bag.
Hi, I planted common vetch as a cover crop.
What kind of vetch?
Common.
Common, okay.
Last fall, it's now. 2 feet tall. It's beautiful.
It's blooming?
It's about 2 feet tall.
And blooming?
And just beginning to bloom.
Okay.
How do I manage to plant under that? I'm prepared to weed whack and take the top off and put it into the compost pile. But there's a heavy root growth underneath.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure. Do I just plant through that?
That's what I would do. In fact, that's what I do. I like vetches can be good. They're a good nitrogen fixer, but you don't want to let them go to seed.
Right.
Because, boy, that's you'll be pulling that stuff for years. another saying, one year of seeds, 7 years of weeds.
Yes.
So that would be good to weed whack it down and compost it. And then you could either leave it that way or cover it with, well, it depends. Do you want to cover it with cardboard or newspaper and then compost on top of that, or with nothing? I mean, you've got these stalks right there, and they'll act as somewhat of a mulch too, and they shouldn't grow again. Once you cut them,
right,
they're good,
right.
And it's good to leave the roots in the soil, I think, because that's where the nitrogen is, right,
yeah,
on the root zone there. So I've done it both ways. In fact, some of what I've done is to not compost the tops, but instead plant my broccoli or tomatoes, and then use the cut stalks to mulch around those planted plants.
I see.
So I put it back onto the soil and use that as a mulch.
I see. So just put the green manure laying down around.
Yeah, so it'd be green mulch rather than manure,
right.
I guess. Yeah, that's exactly what I do. And then it's easier for you because you don't have to haul it to the compost.
Yeah.
And you have mulch right there ready to go.
I like your advice.
Yeah,
great. Can I ask another question?
Okay.
I have some, I guess they're four-year-old, green globe artichokes, and they're huge. Some of them have four or five different stalks with artichokes developing on them now. Is there? I'm prepared to kind of tie them up for the summer and while I'm picking them. But I wonder, is it possible to divide the roots of artichokes?
You know, I've never heard of that being able to be done. Because it's the main stalk, isn't it? And then that stalk branches off. Is that correct?
Well,
I don't grow artichoke because they take up so darn much room.
Yeah, I know that.
If they have multiple stalks coming out of the ground, then I would say it's worth a try. But I've never read about that or heard about that.
Okay.
So do it and report back to me.
All right, I will. Thank you.
Great. You're welcome. Okay. Mark's with the dirt bag.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Couple of questions. I don't know if you're going to have time to answer them or not. But first of all, I planted broccoli 2 years in a row now that was purchased at a store, organic broccoli starts. Both years, they failed miserably. First year, I was told it was something called wasting disease. This year, I don't know what it is. They don't look the same, but they just refuse to grow. Wondered if you've heard anything about diseases in broccoli that's being propagated in commercial operations or what's going on. And the second question is about meat scraps in compost. I've always heard you're not supposed to put meat scraps in compost, and I'm wondering what the reason for that is.
Well, I'll just deal with the meat briefly. It's just because it's the potential risk is huge. I mean, you'll be dealing with rats, putrefying compost, and maybe other organisms too, wildlife that you don't want in your compost. But having said that, it'll compost. It's not that that's the problem. A better way to compost it would probably be to bury it rather than mixing it in with your yard debris and food, your vegetable compost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. It just takes a lot longer for it to, before it composts, it putrefies. Whew. I don't think you don't want to deal with that. Now, on the broccoli, have you pulled up any of the plants and looked at the stalks?
Well, I did the first year, and I took it to a master gardener, and they said, yes, this is wasting disease. The stalk was all shrunk down to where it couldn't pass nutrients anymore. This year, I don't see that. The plants just refuse to grow. They're about the same size as when I put them in the ground a month and a half ago.
Well, I mean, for one, I don't know what this wasting disease is. I've heard of that in fish.
And
other things, but
the stalk shrinks to where it's just a thread just below the dirt line. There's just a thread there so that the roots can no longer support the plant. There's no way for the nutrients to get through.
Okay, what the problem that I've had with broccoli, and I'm going to have to make this real quick, is ants girdling the stalk. So look down there and see if you've got ants around there.
Yeah, no, so, I've already done that. There's nothing there.
Okay, then the second thing is you got to pull up a plant and look at the roots. Are there any roots?
Yep.
There's a couple of things that come to mind. One is a fungal disease called clubroot, which is not exactly what you're describing here, but it makes the roots huge. And you'll notice that right away. The other thing that I'm thinking, it might be a symphylans. If you've planted the broccoli in the same spot, these are soil-dwelling little creatures there that eat on the feeder roots, and then the plant just can't get bigger. So pull it up and look for these symphylans are very small creatures, 16th of an inch or smaller in the soil. They're white, oversized antenna, and they crawl quickly. So that's the best I can do in the time that we have here. Let me know next month. Okay, I'll be back. Let's see, what's this, June? I'll be back in July. How about that? Hey, thanks, Kate. Be well.
That's a whole lot of cornflakes near enough to feed New York till 1973. And the nation buys my car for me immediately. And holding $60,000, I watch his dumper trucks tip New York's cornflakes in the sea. Now I'm a farmer.
The City Repair Project's annual Village Building Convergence takes place across Portland June 5th through 14th. The theme for this 9th annual VBC is Momentum, Powered by the People, chosen to reflect the collaborative energy and creative forces that citizens can build together. The BBC includes over 25 neighborhood sites who have been organizing community-based projects such as water catchment systems, intersection paintings, and cob benches, which will be built during the week. The BBC also includes live music, workshops, meals, and speakers, including activist Starhawk, Robert Laporte, natural house building pioneer, and permaculture designer Larry Santoyo. The full schedule is available on the City Repair Project's website at cityrepair.org/VBC.